Hey everybody, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the rise of the micro brands. Lunch with Norm. Lunch with Norm. I really didn't know what to expect with that music. Compare, you know, on Halloween, all of a sudden, you know, my two kids decided to come up with that interesting composition. I wasn't sure if we're going to get back to normal or not. But anyways, hey, today we've got a really great show for you. I'm going to be joined by Vinny Fisher. He's the CEO of Fully Accountable. Vinny and I are going to be discussing his business hybrid work model. And wait till you hear, it's very interesting. And how many companies are adjusting to the new norms, no pun intended, of 2020. So again, in today's episode, we're going to be diving into the 2020s hybrid work method and how it differs from a remote work. We will also be talking about tips to help maintain a healthy work-life environment. But before we get to Vinny, Kelsey, where are you?
Oh, how are you?
You know, vampire out, you know, thing today. You didn't bleed out from that wound.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I did. Just wait for Christmas. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Well, you know, I dressed up as the Travelocity gnome, but nobody came for Halloween. So I just stat, you know, I think that's how I'm always going to dress up now.
I think we need some pictures of that. But before we get off topic here, we should pull it back to following us on social media. We are Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you are watching this clip and you're missing out on something, you can always go back to the YouTube page. Right now it's Norman Farrar, where you can find all the full episodes, and highlight clips go out every single day. And if you want to listen to us and you don't want to see our faces, you can listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just search Lunch with Norm and join our Facebook group. I'm going to pull up the link right now and add it to the chat.
Yeah, so, and I guess the other thing, just before we get started, as well as if this is a replay, just go ahead and skip ahead and, you know, just get right into the meat of it. And for those watching on my personal profile, you can always head over to Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy. That's my fan page, and you can check out whole episodes, highlights, and videos. And Kelsey, what do you tell me always to do? Always reinforce.
Smash that like button and ring
bells. Smash, subscribe. I subscribe and ring bells.
Yes, that's right. Oh, yeah. It looks like Dr. Kaz is joining us. From all Los right. Angeles, 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow.
Oh, come on. Jealous. Take the knife out of my back.
Yeah. We got our first snowfall today, actually. So that's exciting.
It is?
Yeah. And so let us know where you're watching from.
That might be exciting for, you know, Frosty. It might be Frosty's magical moment, but for these old bones, not so much.
And you look like Santa, so.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Right.
That's it for me.
All right. If you have any questions, just throw them over in the comments section and we'll get right to them. If we don't, we'll make sure we get to them after the podcast. So like always, sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee and enjoy the show. All right, Vinny, where are you?
Hey, Norm.
Vinny Fisher, how are you?
Good, brother. Thanks. How are you?
Good. You were telling me just before the show, you used to live up in the Buffalo way.
Yeah, I lived there for 8 years. I went to undergraduate at a little community, or not community college, a school in that community called Canisius College. It's a Jesuit school. Yeah. And so I lived there for 8 years. And Deb and I, we started our journey in family before I shipped off to law school in Ohio. But yeah, I was a Buffalo guy I'm a New York guy by my whole life, but I was a Buffalo guy for 8 years of that time.
So hopefully you were there during the I'm going to say it. People are going to disagree, but the Buffalo Bills dynasty.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have season tickets during those years. And, you know, one of my sad but notorious claim to fame was I gave my playoff tickets away for the comeback game. So I was, it was a gorgeous 60 degree day in Buffalo. And I was listening to Van Miller, the voice of the Bills, while washing my car. And my buddies had my tickets to the Houston Oilers game that I didn't go to.
Oh man, I remember watching it. But anyways, go Bills. I'm still a Bills fan. I live up in Toronto.
I think, fingers crossed, toes crossed. Like, I think the Bills, like, there's a reason why that cultish following exists. I, you know, even though I'm for 20 years been really more of a Browns fan, I grew up a Giants fan, so I've got all kinds of issues. But I think the Bills have a warm spot in my heart too.
Yes. Hey, why don't we just dive in a little bit about your background? If you can just give us a, you know, just a summary about what your background is.
Yeah, you know, I my biggest part of my background is a husband of 25 years. I have four beautiful children. Deb and I have four teenagers who are either adulthood teenagers or practicing such. And I've been a business guy right from the beginning. I had a, you know, I'm professionally trained as a lawyer, had a law practice, a corporate M&A practice, where I learned a lot about the small and medium-sized business. At the end of the day, though, when people look at me, they know of me as a good marketer. And I think there's a lot of accuracy to that. And so I've had a journey in the digital space where I've owned a few larger brands, broke one tragically, sold another one. And here I am again, doing it again. And we also, in addition to our current operating company, I'm that guy who develops and creates and builds teams and ideas. And so we have a portfolio of companies as well that I sit as the chairman of the board on, in addition to my responsibilities here at Fully Accountable.
So Fully Accountable, you talk about this hybrid work model.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. So we, you know, this business, I'm not an accountant. I am not a CFO. I am not one of our controllers. Most of the things you've ever seen me build have been a problem solution orientation. I've had a problem and I wanted to solve it. I'm no different in this business. I had a health supplement company where we sold, our largest product was a woman's face cream called Purabella, but we sold supplement products to consumers in North America, both US and Canada. And while I was operating that business, we were doing mid-stage eight-figure company, and I had no relationship to my bottom line. We were profiting 8% when we should have really been profiting about 22%. Well, that migration, that change in my thinking as a leader of our company led to us launching Fully Accountable after we sold Consumers Choice. And when I was going through that, I was kind of considering what type of model we want to be. And I started looking at traditional accounting firms, and I noticed they were very building centric, and they're who they got for talent and people they hired. And I'm like, you know, I want to do this differently. So in 2014, you know, actually really February of 15, when we launched to the world, you know, I wanted our model to have a corporate model as well as what we now call homies, people who are controllers and CFOs that live in other parts of our country, mostly US, some Canada. And we set out to do that. People thought we were nuts then. Now, fast forward to 2020, and we look like overnight successes.
I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we had Tim Francis on. And Tim's a great guy. And he talks about you have to know your numbers, but he's not so much on the accounting side. He's, you know, on the Amazon side, you know your PPC numbers, just understand where you're losing money or how you can lose money, how you can bleed. This is on the other side of the fence. And, you know, this is more, if I understand this correctly, you're on your company, or when you talk about this hybrid work model, this is more on the accounting side, isn't it?
Yeah, so we really run the back office of e-commerce and tech companies. So, you know, to put some understanding, think fractional CFO and controller, we, the four positions that are necessary in an accounting company, right? The data analyst, the bookkeeper, the controller, and the CFO, we offer the package to do that for companies. So we're the workers. Now, where we're different, Tim is a friend, I like Tim. There's this dashboard mentality that has kind of grown up in recent time because of technology, that if you've got the right tools, you can learn real-time information, but that hasn't replaced the need for high production and accounting. So we say we tie to the bank account, not to some piece of software that says something. So the variances between what a software says versus what shows up in your bank account, we live in that part of the world, what's cash in your bank. And so our team would operate there, operating high transaction businesses from the accounting and finance side.
So Vinny, most of the people that are, we've probably got a third from beginner, completely yeah. new to Amazon, intermediate, as well as people that are advanced. Can we go through some of the things that people should be looking for?
Absolutely. So,
and I'm talking about, let's just start right at the beginners. Beginners, intermediate, and then some advanced tips.
Yep. Okay, let's start with some of the really what I would consider everybody should do it. By the way I see basic, intermediate, and advanced, and maybe you use different words there, but think advanced should have everything that the intermediate and the basic have, right? The idea of advanced, if the growth of your company isn't such that you're ready for some of those more sophisticated things, then let's talk about what the thing basic stuff that everybody should be doing, right? So if you rely on Amazon as a marketplace and you all your traffic is organic in nature, then what you're relying on is ranking, your page optimization, as well as your reviews. And those three things dictate the activity to your page. That's a pretty marketing, yep, got it, check the box. What we also say is, wait a minute, since you're doing most of your relationship with Amazon at that level organically, then you're paying a cost to acquire the customer in the FBA model with Amazon. So you should be tracking that and integrating and seeing that in relationship to the privilege to get organic sales. You're still paying for the customer. You're just paying for it in a different way. And so the acquisition cost of a consumer is a critical thing to measure, whether you're basic or bigger or even bigger than that. And so to me, that's the number one thing that should be measured. And what's unfortunate sometimes with Amazon businesses is you leave that category as zero when really your cost to acquire, while it doesn't look direct, has an indirect expense in the percentage you have to pay back through FBA cost, 20 to 30% based on your model. And so to me, that's first one. Second one is, you know, managing an inventory, right? If you're selling a product, you still have inventories to manage. So your supply cycle, like your chain of overturning that inventory, whether it's sitting on the warehouse floor of Amazon or direct ship from your own company. So a management process for like calculating and managing your inventory, super critical. And then of course, I think of the top 10 list of things that when I operate my companies, I want to know refund rate. I want to know lifetime value. But before I even get the lifetime value of a customer, I care about my shopping cart value. It's hard to really figure out lifetime value if you're a newer company. So I care about average order value, the amount of what I can do to add to that shopping cart. So the interesting thing in the digital world, you either get that customer the first time and you spend a bunch of money re-engaging that customer, or you have some type of model of reoccurring revenue. And so that also needs to be tracked as well. And so what, you know, we will share with the show, with our guests, but we have a kind of a top 10 KPI marketplace Amazon thing that we would measure if we were operating your company. And so look forward to that gift at the end of the show, but kind of a thing we measure and would recommend you measure if you're that type of business.
Okay, very good. And yes, there is going to be that gift at the end of the show, which Vinny is going to be offering. So stay tuned. Hey, I just noticed that Simon piped up here. Not a question, but a lockdown. So, hey, Simon, sorry to hear about that. I had no idea. I heard there was a couple of countries that were just skyrocketing with this sort of second phase. But sorry to hear that. Keep staying tuned. Stay yeah. tuned till the end. Now you have even more of a reason to listen to Lunch with Norm. So, okay. So now, Vinny, any more insight or tips that you can give our sellers?
You know, it's interesting. Amazon is a channel. It's a wonderful channel. And, you know, I've thrived well in my products businesses using Amazon as a channel. What's interestingly going on right now is it's an entirely separate channel from other direct to consumer channels. And so I had a guy ask me literally as soon as Friday of last week, hey, I'm really strong in Amazon. I've got room to grow there, but I want to consider opening up another direct response channel. What would you recommend? And what I said to him was, I would recommend you go deeper in the room you can grow in Amazon and not go create a whole bunch of other resources to try to expand or create your offer to work outside that platform. Now, the reason I say that is I think that businesses need to go deeper before they go wider. And so the thing that is the secret weapon of Fully Accountable is we stood for a niche. We are the largest in what we do in our category because we clearly know who we work with. We work with e-commerce businesses that are doing seven figures in revenue, and we're their fractional or controller, CFO, or back office operator for that type of business. Now, can you be that clear when you have an Amazon channel? Absolutely. You are relying on your organic optimized listing as well as the culture of reviews and the quality of the product you have. Well, there's room to not only grow up the page ranking, but also to increase other things like reoccurring revenue or ads on Amazon. I see right now this temptation to grow multi-channel. And I would say go deeper before you go wider.
That's an interesting comment, because if I talk to 10 different people, you would stand out, because most people are saying, hey, you got to get onto Shopify. You got to get on eBay, get on here, get on there. And I understand what you're saying, and that's interesting. So if you're getting deeper, how can you protect yourself? And that's been the question that everybody's been asking, with Amazon just randomly suppressing listings. You know, how do you protect yourself so you know that you're going to have a good fourth quarter rather than somebody calling in a false infringement claim?
It's a business to run, right? And so the reality is we have, you know, good ideas that can qualify as distractions. And most good operators, when they look at the idea of another channel, it's a defensive hedge instead of a growth idea. If you want to grow another channel, not from a defensive hedge standpoint, but because you want to develop expertise to add expansion of customers, great. Can you afford the distraction as well as the capital investment to do that? Great, then add that into your planning. But as a defensive hedge, the reason I don't love it is because it's going to become another distraction. And there are hundreds and thousands of business examples where people will dabble in other areas and they'll destroy their company. You know, 4 out of 5 businesses run out of cash. 82% of companies run out of cash flow. And most of that is investing in distractions. They're good ideas. They're just wrongly timed. And so businesses that thrive will expand, but also will build up cash. Right now, there's a big change going on in direct to consumer. It used to be you'll do everything you can to get someone's eyeballs paying attention to a digital acquisition so that they were buying online. Well, with the shutdown, the mass adoption rate to people buying online has changed behavioral aspects. So the brands and the micro brands that are going to thrive and do more than survive are not going to look at defensive hedge. They're going to look at growth as categories.
It's interesting what you were just saying there, because if I take a look at a lot of Amazon sellers, even when they spread out to multi-channel, it's squirrel.
Squirrel.
You know, it's just shiny object syndrome. And when you do take your eye off the ball, that can happen if it's not done properly.
And I would say, Norm, just to not even like go back and forth with you, not mm-hmm. can happen. It does happen. You know, 95% of companies don't see their 10th anniversary in business.
Right.
The reason is because it's like your unruly teenager. Kelsey's a great guy, but when he was that unruly teenager of yours, he had just enough knowledge that he thought he knew everything. And he went out and did all this crazy stuff. And you, as good dad, knew, all right, he's going to come back down to earth and we'll be able to get through that stage. Well, businesses go through that. They get just enough cash flow. They become the unruly teenager and they start chasing all these things. I'm that guy. I get the fear of missing out on multi-channel, but when we look at the numbers and when we're measuring and benchmarking people's success, there's a reason that 42 cents of every dollar is overspent either acquiring the customer or reacquiring your customer. And most of that has to do with the channel envy where you're spread too thin. And it's the whole argument that I make that I'm watching businesses do. You need to cut some of those channels out and go deeper. Now, I love the idea of adding one or two, but this idea of being everywhere to hedge against Amazon is anti-stability of the business.
You know, it's interesting. We talk, and we had Tim talked about this quite a bit, was cash flow. And we had a client that came on, and he was an eight-figure seller. The problem was he was doing everything themselves. And because they did everything themselves, they didn't understand how the experts worked.
Yeah.
And they lost, we saved them $800,000 in shipping fees in a year. Just cash flow, I should say cash flow. But by breaking it up and doing their shipments in intervals rather than all one time,
nice.
They didn't have to tie up so much capital. And so we were able to do that. And why? Because, you know, my partner is an expert in that, in logistics and supply chain management, like with you. But people are afraid to spend money and they spend it in the wrong places. So I love what you're saying, you know, getting somebody on board, going deep, and then managing it properly, especially if you're a 7 or 8 figure seller, you're there. What makes you think that you can just do this on a whim?
Well, you got there, but Norm, in defense of that guy, he got there to that eight-figure place by himself. Mm-hmm. Now, just speaking to another, probably someone we both know who is a great guy, he's living almost eight figures in Amazon, and he has spent no time, money, or resources investing in the development of his operations. He's very lean, leans on the FBA structure and runs a very lean organization. Well, the reality is most businesses that are about to hit, you know, are above seven figures in revenue, let alone eight, have infrastructure. I would tell you, Amazon people, if you're there, start investing in that. Because if you want to go into other channels and you think all of a sudden that you're going to start managing those things all by yourself, that's the problem that happens is you run a very lean operation. And next thing you know, you start adding complexity to it. And I believe in people over process. But without good process added to good people, you're never going to win that battle in your brand management. You're going to be overtaken by distraction and dysfunction.
100% agree. Michael Gerber, E-Myth. I'm a graduate of the E-Myth Academy.
Okay.
And changed my life. This goes back 25 years ago in writing processes and, you know, making things automated and scalable. But it's the process that makes everything flow. Couldn't do what I'm doing without processes.
Yeah.
And learning how to delegate and having quantifiable reports, knowing, you know, when and how things have to change. But anyway, Kelsey, I think we have a question from Dr. Kaz.
Yes. He's asking, what are your top five channels / marketplaces?
Okay. Let's start with the fairness of that question that we're going to build off Amazon as the big boy, right? let's just start there. Let's accept that. I know there's some of our listeners or watchers who are going to have friction with that, but let's just agree that Amazon has that spot. I think a channel and a marketplace are different things. I want to be really careful, right? So, you know, I'm a marketer. I think about lead gen and where the audience is. And I would say that's a tough question because everyone's channels are going to be a little different based on the type of business you are. So, for example, I've loved the supplement space in the health industry. Well, our friends at Facebook don't love supplements for policy reasons. So I'm always in this battle with Facebook as it relates to our health supplement company, and our clients are. That's tough. But in AdWords on Google, while we might not be able to expand above a certain number, there is such a forgotten space in AdWords as it relates to being able to acquire customers profitably. It's funny, when people went towards all Amazon, they forgot how valuable our friends at Google and AdWord placement is. And so the reason I bring up that as a friction is I believe in channels based on audience. And so back to my discussion about niching and understanding exactly who your addressable market and who your avatar is the channel will change. So if I sell a product that is very women-based and it's going to be either recipe or art-based, I would have probably used Pinterest as a massive channel to drive leads. The reverse is true. If it's not women-based in my audience, I'm probably not using Pinterest as a channel. And so if my audience is older, then I'm probably leaning towards Facebook and less towards Instagram and Talk or Tick or Tweet or anything else. And so the channel is really dictated, Doc, by who your audience is. But when I look at it just kind of straight up there, you know, each channel has their value. I'm more afraid of people in being in too many channels and also the wrong channels and not being in five. My recommendation is be in three or less and be winning those massively. And if you are, then you're the size of company that can afford in divisionalizing your channels and add in channel four and five.
Yeah, if your profile or if your audience, and you're right, you have to know your audience. If you don't know your audience, you're throwing good money out the window. And the more defined that audience is, even better. If that's Facebook, I mean, just drilling down on the interest side of things when you're doing ads. But building, and this is, I don't know if you do this. We do this. I'm an old school marketing guy. Yeah. So we build personas. So if we talk about, Frankie or Mary or Sophia, we know that elevator pitch that we're going to give. And, that's going to fit, like you said, Pinterest. And if you're marketing me on Pinterest, sorry, I'm not going to be responding. But my wife, she's on Pinterest all the time.
Yeah, right. 4 out of 5 people on the internet that are women are on Pinterest. It's like, that's a place you got to address if you sell some type of product that's congruent to the marketplace of Pinterest. And so I couldn't agree more. Like, we have Ecom Eric and Ecom Angela, and we have a full avatar to those two people. And it's important because once you know your addressable market, your copy gets better. We live from fully accountable standpoint in AdWords, like search, people are looking for us. We sell a need, not a want. And so because of that, we're in places like search categories and we use retargeting. If I'm a product company, I'm probably more of a want than a need. And so since I'm dealing with consumerism, I'm going to be places where people, where I'm coming top of mind. So I love Instagram and Facebook and these places, but I don't love them if the people that I sell to aren't there.
Perfect. Exactly. So I think I can't see very well, Kels, as you know, but Tony's there.
Yes, Tony is joining us. He says, "Hi guys, great info. Do you recommend Klaviyo for lead generation?" I think that's how you say it.
Klaviyo is a good, everybody has their flavor of choice for their email service provider. And we went in under the hood and looked at Klaviyo real deep and test drove it. And we found that its inbox and some of its quality scores were comparable. And so I'd say to me, that it's not disqualified. If you like it as a tool, then to me, it's about making sure it fits like within the matrix of what you're doing. So I like Klaviyo. But what I would give is what I think a more complete answer that hopefully you're looking for is, how do I use that in a way as it relates to how I'm using retargeting or how I'm using my chat system? Today, there is this I think Ryan Dice is probably the most credited for this octopus effect, where you have to have it be part of an entire strategy of your lead generation. And so, I love email. By the way, everybody, newsflash, it's still the number one way we make revenue as business owners in the internet. It's not other ways. And so if you're not using email as a strong part of your strategy, then you're probably an earlier adopter jumping onto other click things. And so I love that, Tony, you're thinking about Klaviyo as lead gen. It just fits within it. And it's a good tool. We like it. It's robust. It does other e-commerce things in addition to just lead gen. So I hopefully someone on your team is using some of those tools as well.
Yeah, we just call that the blitz. You know, just we want to hit from all angles, not just one. If you're just using one, you're definitely missing out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, Dr. Kaz has a comment.
Yes, he says, hey, Vinny, can you break down some recommended target ad costs, i.e. percentage of sales, et cetera?
Yeah, and so I actually, you know, this gift we're going to give you at the end to tease it, I have somewhere we're going to break that down for you in extreme detail. But let me speak about it at the level of us listening right now. It's factual that 42 cents on average of every dollar is spent acquiring a customer. By far, your largest expense in acquisition of a consumer and direct response and direct to consumer. And what does that mean? We're sending someone to a shopping cart. Marketplaces, because of the reach that like someone like Amazon provides, you have a lower cost to acquire, but you still have a real cost because you're paying back the king at FBA a big chunk of that. So maybe you're 30%. But the largest expense by far is acquisition of the consumer. And even right next to that is reacquiring your customer. Just because you get them once doesn't mean you might not have to go back at them again. And if you're somebody who's a one and done and you have to re-court them all the time, then you're going to measure whether or not how much you're spending to reacquire or re-engage that exact same customer who bought from you once. Right behind that in the product world is this idea that was spoke about earlier by Norm and his partner and their expertise. It's managing your inventory. I'll tell you, I watch so many people get excited about their offer popping. And the first thing they do is they go buy as much inventory because they want to get their price down or their cost of goods sold. And today, with the tech stack out there, I think be very careful about overbuying inventory and managing a ratio where you can either on demand or quarterly or maybe even something closer to monthly, manage your inventory load. Is that going to be fiscally better for you than buying these big, massive dumps and hoping for a freight to show up and then run out? It's so much volatility. So that would be the next thing I measure. And then it's a function of things, right? So I believe in the idea of benchmarking. Benchmarking is something I didn't understand. It's this idea of measuring you against yourself now versus yesterday, last month, last quarter, last year. And then also benchmarking against the industry you're in. So for example, that health supplement company I had, it wasn't until I knew that the industry would have supported about 22 to 25% as my profit margin that I would have realized that my 8%, I was losing 14 points a month. So if I'm running what I consider a traditional Amazon marketplace and my margin's plus minus 30%, and I'm making 15%, well, like, gosh darn it, I better know where my leaky bucket is leaking so I can address those issues. And the only way I see to effectively do that is to take that P&L statement you have and benchmark it against yourself as well as the industry.
Great answer. One of the things I like to add to is, for me, I love recurring revenue.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening, it's a little bit different model because I'll spend a lot more to acquire. So I like to go up to break even. First time buy, if they're buying my soap, great. You know, I'll give it to them basically. You know, I'll spend as much as I need up to break even to get them to buy it. But once I got them, then they're hooked. And you know what? It's like press. So we work a lot with press releases. And it's like press releases. It's one and done. So, you know, so many people, oh, it didn't work. Well, why didn't it work? Because you didn't use it properly. And that's the same thing here. If you're not going back and sending something to your client, an email, a text message, something to acquire that customer, they might not remember who their soap guy was.
Absolutely. You know, so noisy today. I mean, it's so noisy, right? The beautiful thing about technology today is it's allowed more people like you and I, Norm, to enter the marketplace as an operator. That has also made it noisy. And as a result of that, we need to fine tune and improve our marketing message. You know, if you think about even before all this world shutdown, direct to consumer as a category was still lower in what the theorists thought should have been the adoption rate by now. And so you and I were trained at a time where we spend every dollar we can just to get them to be a customer. Well, I think we're about to see a change in our industry where cash flow is really going to win the brand day. And what I mean by that is I still would spend a dollar to get a dollar to get a customer. It's just the old school marketer in me. But there are things that are going to matter. Engagement, re-engagement, how much my inventory is going to be. The people that can actually acquire a customer and not give every dollar away can afford to do things to re-engage, add reoccurring. This next journey of direct-to-consumer isn't going to be about convincing people to buy online. It's going to be about taking advantage of the adoption rate.
One of the other areas that people aren't really looking into, Paul Barron came on and was talking about this it works through the Facebook Messenger, but you could do it yourself just doing Google searches. But that is finding nano influencers and getting them to be brand ambassadors. So now it's free. You get them to promote for you. You get them to buy the product basically at full value or a few points off. They're spreading the word, and it's just new school compared to old school marketing, which I absolutely love.
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, people know me if they've known, I've been around a while. My kids call me OG, but you know, I made my first run, my second and my third run on affiliate marketing. I think of as affiliate marketing as a sales force. They're doing the legwork for you. Quite honestly, look at the micro influencer is just another version of affiliate marketing. They're doing the work. And so to me, when you look at real strong brand deployment, affiliate marketing is probably one of the best weapons in digital marketing. And it blows my mind how people are not running to affiliate marketing as a way to expand their brand.
Absolutely, 100% agree. Kels, is there another question?
Yep. And just to let you guys know, it is about 12:40 too.
Okay, we've got 5 minutes.
Okay. And so what's your top email marketing Shopify app?
Yeah, there's a few of them out there. The ones at the top of the marketplace, they're kind of all the same. You know, I have a philosophy that I use with my team. I want the persons who are going to use them to use them. I think there's a mentality going on in digital right now about who's got the competitive edge in automation and who's got the best tool. I actually think who are the people using the tools, what they have, to their best level. Right now, there's this kind of like this thing going on that people are overbuying tools, expecting their things to change. I wish so many people put more energy into the content of their email as they would to which tool they're using. Because those ones that are rated are all very competitive. I don't actually, honestly, I'm tipping my hand, say this one versus that one. I would say use one of the ones that best fits your organization, and you can ask your friends on Facebook or a small network you have. And I'm sure Norm and his team would have a big, strong opinion about that. But regardless of which one you use, to me, I would really critically push into this automation thing that's creeping into teams, that somehow there's a set it and forget it mentality. And I think it's watering down the quality of engagement and content.
I talk to people about understanding or learning more about apps. So, and Excel is the best one. So they put a plus sign equals, you know, you get your sum and that's about it. And if people only knew the power of that, you know, that spreadsheet and the time it could save, and then you apply that to all these different apps that are out there, it's incredibly powerful, but they're useless until you either find an expert. So, you know, go out and outsource it to an expert, Bert, or sit down and watch the bloody training videos.
And do the work, right? And so, I mean, with learning without execution is just a dream.
Right. Right.
That part of the problems with tech today is, like, I think there's not enough people pushing into execution. They just want to dream about the automation that's out there. And all of a sudden we get dashboard envy. And suddenly we think we're going to solve the problems of our converting or lack of converting offer by having the whiz bang next tool. And maybe we could work on dialing in on the avatar and the addressable market and how we communicate with him or her.
I see Tony's got another question. And we're getting right down there, by the way.
Is messenger marketing with ManyChat still doing well?
Yeah, I think all of them. I mean, ManyChat's just a tool. I love the idea of the spider web effect. You know, to me, ManyChat can be used, it's a pickup rate. So, you know, in the early days, you know, when I had my own shopping cart, I would use Amazon as an exit strategy. If you were leaving my page, I would pop up a coupon to get you to go to Amazon to buy off Amazon. I still love that strategy. Well, I like ManyChat in the footer of email. I like ManyChat in the delivery. It's a pickup strategy where I can automate my deliverables to the consumer. And I look at it as another way to create communication. You know, if you look at stuff out there that says 7 to 10 times someone needs to see your stuff and to be a buyer. Well, that's true. And there's these throttles on algorithms that say that every 7 to 10 gets throttled. Well, if you extrapolate that out, you might need 70 to 100 impressions on somebody before they become a buyer. So every tool that you can add to the arsenal, like ManyChat, is only going to make your engagement or your retarget activity that much better.
So Vinny, I know we're tight for time today. You've got a hard cutoff in a couple minutes. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we got to let you go?
You know, I think the thing that I like to do is that I love how Amazon as a marketplace has allowed business owners to get into 7 figures with a very lean team. But that next stage of growth requires adding people into your organization. Whether you do that on an outsourced model and you let the heartbeat manage outsourced resources and agencies, or you build and develop internally, or a little bit of both, which is where I tend to believe, that is critical to operational growth. Like, this idea of automating your way there is going to run up against a wall someday, because you're not going to be able to sell that business because you will have trapped yourself into a high paying job if you're the only one pulling the levers. So I would double click on that as you continue to grow out your organization, unless you just plan to always run it yourself. But if you really want to truly sell something and you're the only one there, you're going to have a problem if you haven't grown that beyond your shadow. And so I have a gift for you, Norm. I told you about that I wanted to give to everybody. And it's at fullyaccountable.com/lunchwithnorm. And there I wrote a book called The CEO's Mindset. It's a best-selling book that helps you with this exact idea of growing your business beyond your shadow. We also want to give you false profits. It's not the top line that pays you. It's what you keep in your pocket at the end of the month. And so we really care about that. And then we've given you resources of critical KPIs and what I would do to use internal versus external resources as I develop out my operational team.
That is an incredible bonus. And thank you so much for offering that.
You're welcome. I love it. I love your energy, Norm. I see why people like the beard guy. And so, you know, whatever, you know, I'm on this mission right now where, you know, we're doing quite well. We're exploding because of the marketplace and what's going on. But I'm at this stage where our mission is to double the profit margin of 10,000 companies. Well, we're not going to be the service provider for all of them. So if we can provide resources to help you develop that and have that, and some we'll work with and some we won't, then we're going to get that much closer to our mission if we can get more people doing that.
Fantastic. I see one question snuck in. Do you have time for that?
Sure. Let's do it, Norm.
All right.
Because of the 80-20 principle, besides Amazon, what is the second or third tool you would recommend people focus on?
So I think someone in direct response marketing, direct to consumer engagement, you know, you have to make a decision. Are you driving them to your Amazon shopping cart or to your own? Because if you're going to drive to your own, now you actually have to develop an offer. something that converts. If you're driving them into optimized listing, then I only have to work on ad copy that gets to the part of that. So first and foremost, before you look at this idea of a tool or a focus, am I driving more eyeballs to my Amazon marketplace, or am I looking to expand my eyeballs and add more to my own retail cart? Let's assume for the sake of that discussion, you want both. You want to expand Amazon and you want to add to your own retail cart. Well, those are different activities. And as a direct response marketer who started my career really without Amazon being one of my go-to moves, I learned to write offers and get people to come directly to my shopping cart. So for me, I like both. I do inherently believe that I don't want to be incumbent to one channel. I think businesses have to focus on single points of failure. Just like I don't want to have one processing account for merchant processing. I don't want to have one bank. I don't want to have one channel. I love the idea of adding a second channel. But before you get there, you got to decide, am I driving into my Amazon cart, or am I building out a whole nother methodology and expertise and driving them to my own shopping cart?
Very good. All right, Vinny. Well, thank you for being on the podcast today. How do people contact you?
You know, I'm very accessible at VinnyFisher.com. I have all my social footprints. We also developed WeCareAtFullyAccountable.com. Drop us an email. Go to our website. Find us. We are very accessible. We want to help people. And you just take advantage of our resources at FullyAccountable.com/lunchwithNorm. Those are great resources for you to get moving. And I just double dog dare you to start reading and taking advantage of those.
A double dog dare. There we go. All right. So I'm going to let you go. I know you got to get on another call, but once again, thanks again. And I am going to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks, Norm. It was really great to be here today.
All right. See you later, Vinny.
See you, buddy.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show today. I know I sat back and I learned a bit myself. Vinny was awesome, and we'll get him back on. But before we do anything else, Kelsey.
Hello.
Where did you go? There you are. All right. What should we do?
All right. Follow us on social media if you haven't already. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We're on everything. And if you're watching now and you still haven't, please hit that like button. It does us so much good hitting that like, even a share. Share is even better. Get more eyeballs on us. And we are a podcast. So if you're watching on or if you want to watch us on like Apple or Spotify, we're on everything. Just search Lunch with Norm. And yeah, we've got our Facebook page or our Facebook group. It's still in the baby phases. It's still growing. It's right here. You can search us. It's Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA, and E-commerce Collective. You can join. There's 3 questions you need to answer to get in. But other than that, it's a great opportunity to ask your questions to Norm. Any advice? We've got former guests from the show on answering questions. So yeah, it's a great place for anyone, Amazon or e-commerce, beginner, intermediate, advanced.
It's for online sellers to grow their business. And it's not just me. It's a bunch of people answering questions, all part of the group. So we've got a bunch of experts and we've got a bunch of people that are in the group that all contribute. So trying to really grow that community. Yep. And I guess, to wrap things up, just please subscribe to our newsletter. It just came out today. It doesn't suck. We have all sorts of content. Comes out every Monday. Looks great. If you want, you can go to normanferrar.com or you can go to Lunch with Norm and just subscribe. So next Wednesday is Cassandra appearing again. So Cassandra Craven from Helium 10, she's going to be talking about social media and building influencers. And then we got
a big
Mr.
one.
King. Kevin King's coming on for his November appearance. So I can't wait. That's on Friday. And I think that's it for now. Go ahead, Kels.
So if you do have any questions from today, or if you want to get your questions in for Kevin or Cassandra, you can head over to the Facebook group. Mara made a post where you can put in your questions that you have towards either Norm or Cassandra or Kevin or Vinny too, if you didn't get your question in time. So yeah, you can fill it out there. And I think that's it.
Okay. So remember to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. And everybody, thank you so much for being part of our community. Thank you and enjoy the day. 100, 100, 100.